Hello and welcome to another episode of Mind the Flat, a weekly podcast that brings debate to life's most challenging questions. I'm Chris Heffernan, and as always, I'm joined by my former flatmates and very good friends, Amy Isles.
Bonjour.
And Tom Crowther.
Hello.
This week's life-changing question is, what's the worst way to travel? But before that, it's time to get in the zone with Chris's Quiz of the Week. Question number one. Where in the world would you find the fastest train in commercial service?
Japan.
That was my immediate thought.
It's either Japan or France with the TGV, I think. But I'm pretty sure it's Japan.
I'm sure it's the I feel like my dad will kill me if I get train questions wrong. So let's go with Japan.
That is incorrect.
No. Oh my gosh, he's coming.
It is China.
Oh, no, that makes sense. It was probably Japan 15 years ago.
The Shanghai Maglev. It travels at 267 miles per hour.
Oh, wow. I actually know about this one.
And it's the 19-mile journey. Takes seven minutes from Shanghai's Pudong International Airport to Longyang Metro Station on the outskirts of Shanghai. Number two. Which actor, famous for roles in major film franchises such as Die Hard, Star Wars, and Avengers, stars as Neville Flynn in the 2006 film Snakes on a Plane?
Ooh.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yes.
I was just trying to connect the dots of who's in all of those film franchises, and I eventually got there because he's Mace Windu in Star Wars. He is... Yeah. What were the other ones? Give me the other...
Die Hard.
I've not seen Die Hard, so I can't do that one.
Avengers.
And Avengers.
Yeah, he's obviously Nick Fury in Avengers. So.
Yeah.
Correct. It is, of course, Samuel L. Jackson. He's in the Die Hard film with the famous conundrum of how can you get... The water, how can you find, I think, is it 4 litres of water, but you've only got a 5 litre and a 3 litre bucket?
That's the most boring way that you could describe Die Hard.
Number three. Despite Boaty McBoatface topping the poll, what name did the Natural Environment Research Council decide upon for its new research vessel?
So David Attenborough.
Is that what they called it?
Yep, and then they had a little... boat on it called Boaty McBoatface, which was like their like minor little boat.
Bang on, Tom. Cannot fault you there. You even said the bit that I had in brackets as further information on the quiz question. So, number four. In which year did the first Route Masters, the iconic front-engine double-decker buses, enter service in London? Was it A, 1949... B, 1956, or C, 1962.
Okay, so they used to be, they used to have overhead connections. So they were more like trams originally. So that's not, I don't think they were engined. And so I think the earlier decades, it won't be those because they won't have been the front engined ones. So I think it's one of the two latter ones.
The only thing I was thinking is that I know, like in the early 50s, like you could still hop on the back of a bus.
But did that bus have a cable overhead, or was that an engine?
I don't know.
I feel like you're more likely to hop on the back of a bus that is on a cable system, not a cable system in that it's being pulled, but it has an overhead wire, then if it was like an engined bus, I'd feel less inclined to just hop on the back of something with an engine.
Are you going to say 56 or 62?
Should we go middle of the road?
Sure.
Okay.
Bang on, 1956.
Lovely stuff.
And your final question this week, where in the world is the busiest airport?
I'm thinking New York.
Definitely not. No. It's going to be between Amsterdam Schiphol, Dubai International, or Bangkok. Cock, I think. I would be inclined to say I'd be inclined to say Dubai because it's a hub airport between East and West.
Let's go for Dubai. If it's London Gatwick now, I'm going to go mad.
Dubai is often what people think it is, but it isn't. It is Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, Georgia, USA.
Wow.
What?
Yeah, it has around 107 million passengers.
That's crazy. I've never even heard of it. I mean, I've heard of Atlanta, but I've never heard of that airport.
There you go. You learn something new every day.
Crazy.
So, it's now time to debate. The motion before the flat today is, a bus is the worst way to travel. This week's caveat is, it's all about the travel, not the destination. Other than that, the rules are the same as always. No swearing, no taking offence, and of course, no pompous points. Once again, we start with an affirmative statement. This week from Tom on the buzzkill, that is bus travel.
Buses are miserable. When you think of miserable transport, you think of a bus. You're sat there, stuck, sandwiched between someone that is probably smelly. You know, they're probably leaning on you, pushing you into a window or something. Then when you think of other methods of transport, you don't immediately feel as depressed as you do when you think about a bus. It's always a commute. It's never the travel that you want to be making. You're always there, stuck in this kind of cattle-like environment. I think of the three that we're talking about today, it's the only one where you get crammed in. You know, when you talk about boats, there's a set capacity for the boat. When you talk about planes, there's a set capacity for the plane. When you talk about buses, they always squish you in, standing up like sardines in a can. And it is sweaty, it is uncomfortable, and you always end up with that person that smells of BO right next to you.
Yes, Tom, you are getting a point. Buses are hell on earth.
Yeah, they're always late as well. Like,
oh, I have got that point down, so if you'd like to give me a point for that, then that would be great.
When I was planning my rebuttals for these arguments, I started off just listing things I hated about each mode of transport, and then I was like, wait, I'm not doing this right now.
But yeah, so you touch on something really important, which is buses are always late. And then when you think that you've got ahead of the idea and you turn up late for the bus, then you see it and it's at the stop already, and then you have to run the one day that you're there a little bit late and it's always on time, and you run for the bus, you look like a muppet because everyone's looking at you, the bus driver, it's the only joy that they get out of their job, clearly, because what they do is they look at you, they see you running up, and just as you get there, they slam the doors and they drive off.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you another point, Tom.
Yeah, I've missed the bus so many times because a bus driver has just...
Amy, are you telling me that you've missed the bus
before?
I'm never
late. I'm never late for anything. But yeah, and bus drivers are particularly aggy at times. And I feel bad for saying that because you do get some lovely bus drivers. But it's always the one that you miss where you're at the door and they look at you directly in the eyes and drive off. And it's horrible. Because then you panic about getting somewhere on time. But I'd just like to, before we move on, I'd just like to rewind a little bit back to being cramped in with other people. When you're like squished in with like sardines, it is very uncomfortable. But when I normally, or before lockdown, when I used to catch the bus to go into work, one of the best parts of the bus journey, when it's a little bit quieter and you're not cramped in, which is when I used to catch the bus because I used to be going in during rush hour rather than coming home during rush hour, one of the best bits about riding the bus is people watching, and it is phenomenal. Like when you sit and you've got 5 minutes to yourself, and most people have got like their headphones in, they're doing puzzles, not making any eye contact with people. But if you just sit and watch and you're not one of those people, and you just watch other people, you see some classic stuff both on the bus and outside as you're driving past. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, which I feel really bad for, but like, oh, it's just amazing what people do when they think they're not being watched. It's fantastic.
I've seen a person walk into a lamppost from a bus before. That was fun.
Common bloody gold. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm going to give you a point, Amy, because definitely there is a joy in the bus, in this hubbub of life. Crucially, there's stuff to look at. Whether that be the people on the street, the people on the bus, or just if you want a double-decker bus, you can actually see quite a lot. You can see people's gardens, different types of houses. If you're like me, you're trying to think of what you want your house to look like. Will it look like that one? Will it look like that one? And there's so much to actually look at. And so the journey does disappear.
Yeah.
You go into your own little world.
And on that note as well, going into your own little world, one thing I did like about my commute into the city centre of Bristol from where I live now is that it gives you like that, for me, it gave me like 20 odd minutes in my day that I could just sit and have and let my mind wander. Whereas in the day where you're so busy, you're rushing to do so much, like when you are stuck on a bus for X amount of time, but also because there's nothing you can do in that situation, it's quite I always kind of relish that time just to sit and have a think and get my mind, some days it was getting my mind in order about having time and space to think about what I wanted to do next, or just kind of having space to go, I don't have anything to do here, there's nothing I can do, so I'm just going to sit back and have 5 minutes to myself.
Okay, I like the idea of that, and I'll give you a point for that kind of that moment in your day when you get to sit and do nothing, and you know you don't have to worry about where you're going to be because it's out of your control at that point. But I have to say, with buses, there's always that moment when that journey comes to an end and you have to get up and the bus is still going. If you're upstairs, it's always a game of how late do I leave it so that when I'm walking down the stairs, the bus driver doesn't slam the brakes on and I don't get sent hurtling down those stairs to crash into the bottom and land at the lap of on the lap of someone in the seat down below.
Yeah, I'll give you a point there. Buses are perilous for that, in that you do have to move around them when they're moving, and bus drivers are not often patient people.
Yeah.
It's amazing. For the number of buses that run late, they're very fast when you're on them. They don't dilly-dally when you're on them. So you wonder, how on earth did you ever get late, okay? You never give me any time to get up and down the stairs. You're off. Go, go, go. It's all go, go, go. Except when you're waiting for the bus, and then it's slow, slow, slow. So, yeah, Tom, perilous. Right. Let's come to Amy. Amy, talk to us about the buses of the sky.
The buses of the sky. I like it. Okay, so bus trips in particular are fairly short-lived. If you're just commuting like into work or wherever, or what we've discussed so far, let's put it that way, fairly short-lived journeys. On a plane, you are stuck there for X amount of hours normally, unless you're flying domestically, kind of like to Northern Ireland or Scotland. Especially transatlantic flights, there is no escape. A bus, you can stop and get off it. If you've had enough, you can... I know you're probably on your way to somewhere, but there is that option. You can get off. A plane, no option. You are stuck on this plane. And also, talking about being cramped, middle seat, worst option ever. And Ryanair flights in particular, I'm going to call them out. What's his
name?
Michael O'Leary, is it? No, it's not Michael O'Leary. Who's the head of Ryanair? Anyway, regardless, if you're listening, head person of Ryanair, they're just making the seats smaller.
They're not listening.
I know they're not listening, but if just on the off chance that they pick up an episode of Mind the Flat.
I love the idea that they listen, they hear you having a go at them, and they go, oh, you know what? We really could change things. Like, you know, we'll make our seats better. We'll make our service better. This is the one thing that makes them change their mind.
They might do. You never know. And also, with a flight, I've got a list of points here that I can go through. But with a flight, there's the most fear of death. Like, a lot of people are scared of flying. And to be honest, when you get in a bit of turbulence that's really bad, it is quite scary. And, like, I'm someone who actually, secretly, quite likes flying. But even so, when I get on a plane, I always get on and the first thing I think is, I could die on this, like 3,000 feet in the air, like no escape, this could be the end. And you don't really get that with as many other methods of transport.
Right, I give you a point for the previous idea of no escape. However, the fact you sit down on a plane and the first thought is, this could be my last ever plane trip. Death is on the way.
Or without fail, every time I fly, I just have a little thought sometimes like, yeah, this could be it this time.
But isn't that outweighed by the excitement of plane travel? You're on the runway and it's getting up speed, it's getting up speed. Here we go, ah, whoa, up you go. I mean, there is something actually blooming exciting about takeoff, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
When the bus leaves the bus stop, everyone's not there going, whoa.
Yeah, okay. No, Chris, you definitely get a point for that, because I think that is, without a doubt, one of the most exciting things about plane travel is that kind of takeoff moment. That moment when you go from, oh, we're just pootling forward, to bang, you're in that takeoff position. But then there's also that what happens when you're actually in the air. You know, of the three that we're talking about today, or especially compared to buses, you get food when you're up there. You know, they come round, and that's exciting. They come round with the trolley and they bring you the food. And you, if you're flying long haul, you get in-flight entertainment. You have movies there. You can listen to music. Like, they've got things for you to do. When you're on a bus, there's not things for you to do unless you like pick up your phone. And if I'm honest, you can pick up your phone anywhere. You don't have to be on a bus to do that.
Yep, Tom, I'll give you that. There's plenty to do on a plane.
Okay, I'll give you a point for the in-flight entertainment. But the food, I am not accepting. It's absolutely vile. When you're on a transatlantic flight, if you're in economy, oh no, it's disgusting.
I completely disagree. I think plain food gets a really bad rap. I think, yeah, it's not like they're bringing out Michelin star food or like, you know, something you'd get from a nice street food stall. I think the excitement of being on a plane and then bringing that round masks any negative aspects. I think it's decent food.
No, definitely. Oh, I don't know what flights you've been going on, but I need to get on those flights, because the flight meals I have had, we always stock up before we get on the plane just in case it is inedible, because I have had some truly terrible in-flight meals. I've also had some very good ones, but the majority have been absolutely rank.
I feel like the difference here is, though, that I will literally eat anything. So food, yeah, as a concept, is exciting for me.
If you're a picky eater, Chris, I'm appealing to you here. You are absolutely stuffed, because you normally get two options, I'd say, in economy. And when it comes, you kind of build yourself up for it to be something nice. And I think, I can't remember, like, it's normally one of the options is pasta. And it's always just mushy to oblivion. Like, the pieces of meat in it are just, they don't even look like meat. They just look like pieces of plastic. And they, the cheese is just, it's not even like cheese. It just kind of evaporates in your mouth, but with no taste. And that's the other thing. It's bland. It's bland as anything.
Could you just have some crisps?
Well, that's the other thing. If you don't have an in-flight meal and you have to buy food, say you get a 4 or 5 hour flight and there's not an in-flight meal, that's quite a long period of time for me. I know I'm tiny, but that is quite a long period of time to go without food. You forget to stock up beforehand. You have to buy something on the flight. It's blooming expensive. They con you out of so much money. When that little food snack trolley comes out, they con you out of so much money.
Why did you forget to pack snacks? That's top of my list. It goes snacks, passport.
If you're rushing, well, you can't take it through. You can't take it through customs, though, can you? You can't take food through, I don't think. Or maybe you can.
Of course, you can't.
I think you can bring food through security.
I've taken rich teas, crisps. I take all sorts through with me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can bring food through.
I think I've always been told to buy it on the other side, because that's how they make their money, in duty free. Anyway, moving on from food. I have some other points I'd like to make. So, the other thing about being trapped in this box in the air for X amount of hours is other people. And the biggest thing for me about flying, the biggest drawback, and I've had some horrific, absolutely horrific flights because of this, it's my biggest bugbear, crying children. And they always end up in the seat behind me. And if they're not crying,
how dare they be so
inconsiderate? If they're not crying, they're kicking your seat. And it's not the children crying I have the problem with. It's the parents that sit there and do absolutely nothing. I was on a flight from Canada to New York the summer before I came to uni. It was about a 5-hour flight, and it was the worst flight I've ever had because there was a family behind us and their children screamed all the way through for 4 or 5 hours non-stop, and they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing to try and remedy that. And that's just...
I am sensing a hell of a lot of anger. So for the sake of diffusing the situation, I am going to give Amy a point.
Because thank you very much.
I do agree. I don't go on transatlantic flights. I don't go to Canada and America and all that malarkey. But when I've gone on my little package holidays in the sun, okay, you're guaranteed to get families on those flights, and you do end up with a lot of screaming children and a lot of drunk parents that aren't doing anything about it. So I would agree with you there, that is a big downside to flying.
Thank you. It always, every single flight I've been on, without fail, there's a crying child at some point.
But I think it's now time to move on. We're gonna come to the ferry, okay? You talk about food and how disgusting it is, okay? But imagine if there was a high percentage chance that food was going to be regurgitated across the floor of the piece of equipment you're travelling in, okay? Sickness on boats is a pretty high frequency, okay? Because when booking that, you don't know whether it's going to be nice and still or whether you're going to have one hell of a rocky journey. And even if the sea's calm, there's still this constant sense of movement, okay? So seasickness on a ferry, disgusting.
Okay, Chris, I will give you a point for seasickness because I think it is something that people tend to have. But I don't think being sick is something that is solely reserved for boats. I've been on a plane when someone next to me has thrown up into one of those little bags. That's why they provide the bags, because they know people are going to throw up. I have actually sat in someone else's seat on a bus because I didn't see it was there. You know. Out of the three modes of transport that we're talking about today, the one that I've never seen sick on is a ferry.
No way.
Okay, well, I'm going to come back at you here. I was on the last ferry to leave Dover during Storm Katie, and I saw people throwing up left, right, and centre. There was a troop of scouts on this trip, okay, all without their parents, one leader trying to look after them all, and they were literally walking around going, I feel sick, splatter over there, splatter over there. You might have seen one person be sick on a plane. You might have sat in one person sick on a bus. Yes, people get ill on those, but on a boat, if you have bad weather on a boat and that boat starts shaking, it's not one person, I'm feeling a bit queasy. It's a lot of sick. That you go to the toilets, it's full of sick because so many people are affected by seasickness on boats. It might not be exclusive to boats, but it's a hell of a lot worse on boats.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to concede to you. I'm not going to give you another point for sick because I'm actually disgusted and I want to move on very quickly.
I just wanted to throw one positive story out there about ferries. Is that I actually got my first boyfriend on a ferry trip. Just wanted to throw that in as...
Did you buy him from the duty free?
Oh, that is so mean! I didn't realise my voice could go that high. Wow. Sorry for the edit, Tom.
This is the way you said got. I got him. I exchanged.
I purchased my first boyfriend on a ferry. No, I got together with my first... I was in year 9. It was on a school trip coming back from Germany. And we'd like driven through Germany to France and then got the ferry from France to home. There'd been this romantic tension all week. And then it kind of all culminated on this ferry ride. And yeah, so ferry is for me.
Sorry, that's not outweighing the sick.
No,
sorry.
But I do love the idea that like you've had this weekend away and the culmination, the romantic culmination was on the ferry crossing the channel.
It was very romantic for a 13-year-old Amy.
To be fair, though, ferries are the only three of these where you get your own little spot outside and you can do the little Titanic thing, put your arms out and... Don't look at me like that, Chris. I've done that before. No judgment, please.
I think that's exactly what me and my first boyfriend did after we got together.
I'm actually going to be sick now, I think.
This is one thing, though, that Amy, that I think ferries kind of... It's interesting is that you can only go to and from certain places. I think even airports, there's more airports than there are ports. And I never really think about this because I live like 10 minutes down the road from Dover. When I get back from France, that's it. I'm home. Like we get off the ferry and we're back. Whereas I imagine for you, it's like we get back from France, we get off the ferry and then we've got to drive back up to where you're from.
So imagine if you felt seasick. It's not the end once you get off the boat. You've then got more travelling.
I'll give you a point there because when we used to travel from... When we used to live in Northern Ireland and we used to travel to go and see my grandma in Lincolnshire, we used to have to get the ferry and then do like a 4-hour drive up to Lincolnshire, which was... I mean, I was only like a child, but I imagine for my parents it was hellish.
Right. I'm going to quickly come in here. You talk about a car. A car is involved in going on a ferry. On none of these other transports do you have this. The perpetual panic for your entire journey that you didn't put the handbrake on the car. Okay? Since working on the Isle of Wight, I've gone on quite a few ferries. The amount of times I get to the passenger lounge, sit down and go, did I put the handbrake on? Did I put the handbrake on? Of course I put the handbrake on. I always put the handbrake on. But I'm stuck in the passenger lounge for the next 40 minutes thinking, I'm going to go down and my car's going to have smashed into another car.
I love the idea that your car is just down there going backwards and forwards, just smashing to and from.
That is what I have the panic of. When you're on your plane, you're not panicking about that. When you're on a bus, you're not panicking about that. On a boat, there's the perpetual panic that you didn't put the handbrake on the car.
I do panic about my luggage on planes, though. Like, there's always that fear that your luggage is going to go missing.
I think, good point, Amy, but I do think that Chris definitely gets a point for his one because have the worry of causing damage to other people's possessions as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just that you might lose something of yours, but also that, you know... You might come down, you have to deal with the stress, the fact that your car has decimated someone else's rear bumper and you have to pay them or sort out the insurance. And then if you're going somewhere, that kind of ruins the journey for you. Not that it's ever happened to anyone here, but it could do.
And then my final point is, when on a ferry, there is nothing to look at. On a plane, you can look at the people on the plane, and on a bus, you can look at the people on the bus, and on a ferry, you can look at the people on the ferry. But the ferry, that is it. On a plane, I love being able to look out the window and you can spot the land. I like spot, oh, that's where I work, or oh, that's there the Alps, or that's the Pyrenees, or look at those mountains. And you can see some quite exciting things and you're following the land and I wonder where we are. On a bus, you've got the sights out the window, gardens, houses. On a ferry, you have the sea. And then you look out the window the next time and it's the sea. You look a bit later. Oh, wait, it's the sea. All you see all the time is the sea. That is it.
I'd just like to quickly give Chris a point for that because when I took a ferry that lasted, I think it was about 2 days across the Caspian Sea from Azerbaijan to Turkmenistan. And it was the worst experience of my life. And the Caspian Sea is vast. And so it's not just like going from, you know, the Isle of Wight to wherever, like Southampton or wherever the ferry goes from, or from, you know, Dover to Calais, where you can see your destination the whole time, you know where it is. When you're going across the Caspian Sea, that ferry takes so long that you are literally just in the middle of nothing for ages. And it was the worst thing in the world, especially because that ferry can just stop and they can refuse to let you enter into the port. And so we could have been stuck there for days.
Right, I think that brings us to a very nice conclusion, which means it is now time to look at the scores on the doors, and they are close.
Ooh.
And it's a bit of a surprise. On 4 points, we have Tom and the bus.
Whoa, I thought I was going to come last.
And I hate buses. And then both with 5 points, we have the plane and the boat.
Wow. What I a know. Shocker.
So close, though. So close.
I think we've picked some quite painful forms of travel. So, thank you very much for listening. And if you'd like to get in contact with us or tell your friends all about us, then you can, either through
our social media. On Facebook, we're Mind the Flat Podcast. On Instagram, we're at mindtheflat_podcast. And don't forget to head there on a Wednesday to have your say in the listeners' poll. And on Twitter, we're at mindtheflat_pod.
Or you can email us at mindtheflatpodcast@gmail.com.
Or visit our website, mindtheflatpodcast.com, where we've got all our episodes from this series and series one. And we'll be back again next week with more debate on another of life's most challenging questions. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.